Good afternoon. Call the Los Osos Groundwater Basin Management Committee Board meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Yeah, roll call. Director Sasana?
I'm here.
Director Gibson?
Here.
Chair Zimmer?
Here.
Please note that Director Reinecke is absent.
Thank you. Okay, item three, Pledge Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Moving to item four, board member comments. We have any comments from the board?
Not at this time.
Okay. I have no comments either. I have to take public comment on that one. No. All right. We'll go to item five, special presentation. There are no special presentations today. Item six, the consent agenda. We have two items on consent agenda. It's the 2024 budget and invoice register and approval of the minutes from March 2024 BMC meeting.
Yeah, since we're still in transitioning to our new accounting system, we've been modifying and adding additional reports related to BMC finances. And as just to help as with this transition, I've asked Adrian, the BMC accountant, to help walk us through some of these new financial reports that you're seeing as part of the consent agenda. And so I'm going to, I don't know if people can see Adrian online, but there
Hello.
She is.
How you doing?
I'm going to change the screen share here. And so we have a number of reports, some of them repeat for different months, but we thought it might be helpful just to start with the latest batch of reports, so the April reports. And so I'll let Adrian take it from here.
It's small for me, but it looks like we're looking at the statement of revenues and expenditures for April. You can see that now we have gotten all of the revenue from all four of the agencies. So there's nothing left in that those budget remaining columns. April looks pretty empty in terms of expenditures. That's just because I haven't gotten any invoices yet for the work done in April. It will come. This is the revenue expenditure. And let's move on to the balance sheet. Scroll down. Somebody made a comment last time about making sure that it balances. And so I added a line item to make sure that you can see how it balances in the end, where we have total assets matches total liabilities and net assets. We can scroll to the next. The new report that I gave you now, if you want it or not, is just the bank reconciliation, which is what I do. So what the bank actually had in their account as of April 30th was $298,000. We had written, but they hadn't been cashed yet, checks for $36,000, which means our reconciled bank balance is $262,000 as of April 30th. And then in with that reconciliation, you can scroll down again and see a few more pages that go with it. So these are the checks that were written but haven't cashed yet, the outstanding. The next one, a special item that happened was getting our final contribution of $67,000. And then we had a bank fee of $2.50 on the last of the reconciliation. And then the last document that I want to show you specifically is the warrant register. These are all of the items we've paid so far. So I just made it, you know, going through even the end of 2024 just to catch everything. So you can just see everything we've paid so far. The reason that is $91,000 as opposed to, I think we had $88,000 as our total expenditures, is because two of these items are associated with last calendar fiscal year. And yeah, that's the difference. So if anybody has any questions, or if you're wanting different reports or reports to look differently, we can always talk about that.
Thanks, Adrian. Yeah, the other thing I would add, we included in the agenda packet was the previous invoice tracking documentation as well for reference. So yeah, I'm open to input, but hopefully this is providing all the banking and accounting information everyone is looking for.
Yeah, I think it's great. Change is hard, but
yeah.
Now that we're in it, I think it'll be fine. So appreciate all the effort, Adrian and Dan, and everybody else who's been.
Yeah, I agree. I see the comments have all been addressed from last time, and it definitely is easier to follow and track. So appreciate all the hard work and effort put into this. Okay. We'll open it up to public comment. Do we have any public comment?
If you'd like to make public comment on the consent agenda and you are online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. There is no public comment online.
And no public comment in the boardroom.
I'll move approval of consent.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes 3-0.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to item 7, public comment for items not appearing on the agenda.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. I do have one online.
Okay, let's go ahead and do online first.
All right, Patrick, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you. I did. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. One thing, could you please, right now you have item 7 public comment on the screen, which is the large one. Could you please make the screen where you can see the dais, all the board members and everything, the large one, and everything else down in the smaller section, so we can see what's going on in the room when we're not able to be there. So please do that. Also, last March, during your last meeting, Beth Reinecke had asked that you have Cleith Harris make a comment on the water level metric and finding out if seawater intrusion could not actually be raising the water level metric. And I don't see anything on the agenda for that today, and I'd like to know how that worked out. In the basin management plan, it even says that seawater intrusion can affect the water level metric. So we need to have that clarified about what that is really, and what really represents the true water level. Also, I wanted to, if I'm not mistaken, Ron Munns had asked the purveyors to write a joint letter in support of the basin, the community plan, and the 1% growth rate. I'd like to just kind of caution you about that at this point. First of all, you don't have the staff report from the Coastal Commission to really know exactly what they are saying in it. And secondly, we don't really have any evidence to show we have a sustainable basin. We have possible indicators that are showing that, you know, well, we had good rainfall for this last 2 years. But, you know, we're not like Cayucos that has Whale Rock Reservoir that they can be using. We're just a basic aquifer, and all we get is our recharge from precipitation, and we don't have enough monitoring wells to really show us exactly what level water levels we have. And if indeed we are at 4.2 and we're supposed to be at 8 foot for the mounding, we're still away, far away from that. So please don't be making any support letters of that is a joint message to the Coastal Commission until you know that we have a sustainable basin, which we do not know that yet. So just think about those things and please get back about Cleve Harris and water level metrics being affected by seawater intrusion. Thank you very much.
There's no further public comment online. And Patrick, just so you know, if you click on the view option in Zoom, you can click swap video and shared screen, and it'll make the boardroom video the larger screen on your computer. No further public comment online.
Okay, thank you. We're going to move to public comment in the room. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Lindy Owen, local. I am trying to pull up the agenda, and we don't have any here in the room for the public. So all I find is 2023 agendas. There's no 2024s on the website. So anyway, I'm just saying it's kind of hard to access the information that is going on in this meeting. I had a question with the 1% growth rate. Again, I'm confused whether it's 4,500 homes based on 4,500 homes or 6,000 homes. But I would like to ask that we come up with a calculation of how much water, extra water, these homes will be drawing. And then I'd like to multiply it each year and find out when we decide that it isn't sustainable to continue doing that growth. Because I'm afraid you're going to find that out. And right now we're looking at trending towards sustainability, which is basically paper money. The idea that we could go ahead and hope that there's plenty of water and we'll just build until we find out that we made a mistake. So I think it would be helpful for a number of us to know how many homes the county wants to put in and what the expectation. I know this 2-for-1 thing is one thing, but there's no verification on that. There never has been. And until the county decides to put meters and oversee new growths, water use, we'll never know. So thank you.
Thank you.
Am I allowed to give you a paper? Okay. I think I have 5 of them there. Thank you, Ron. I'm Becky McFarland, and good afternoon. It's been too long since we all last met, and I would like to request that these meetings be held monthly. There's a lot of months during the past year that we did not have meetings. It's a, you know, it's a time when the community can come and talk about or ask about our water supply. And, you know, after air, water is the next most important thing for humans to survive. So we need some kind of outreach to tell people it's here. Maybe they won't come, but we need to let people know the meetings are happening. How about the Rotary Club sign? It's free and it's simple, and just put the meeting up there. It'd be great with all of the meetings, CSD, LOCAC, etc. I read something about California national water supplies almost every day. And recently, an LA Times article, I found this statement where they said, we're always just 1 year away from drought in California. And our rainfall these past 2 years has been a respite from the preceding very dry years. And our aquifer has shown water level rise, and that is good to see. But we should be very careful in assigning all of that rise to freshwater recharge, especially in light of rising chloride levels that indicate more seawater intrusion. In fact, one of the wells said it was the highest level ever recorded on that well. And then I wonder, you know, I try to figure out, I read these things in these reports, like the basin plan, the whatever, and I just don't get it. Why we keep pushing that this basin is already sustainable. People are saying we're no longer in overdraft, and I wonder, where's the biggest pressure coming from on you? Is it the state? Is it the county? Is it developers? Is it people waiting to build? Where's the pressure coming from? So I just scratch my head and I wonder, if we were all under oath in this room and had to swear that we were telling the truth, would we be saying the same thing? I don't think so. And I don't think I could be wrong. In a recent publication that I read from Sigma called Best Practices for Managing Basins, and it's from the DWR, the chart shows that I gave you that if any one of those indicators, including seawater intrusion, and is it like water quality, if any one of those indicators are not met, then we have undesirable results. I'm sorry. I also found this one last thing that I thought was astounding. Sigma does not incorporate sustainable yield estimates directly into sustainable management criteria. I would like to say the last part, if I could. It's two sentences. Basin-wide pumping within the sustainable yield estimate is neither a measure of nor proof of sustainability. And I think that's a pretty astounding statement coming from Sigma. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Emily Miggins, and my husband's here, the actual hydrogeologist with a background in nitrates. And we don't agree with where we're headed in this town. You can put any of your PhDs and your engineering degrees. We have the qualifications. I have my background in sustainability measurement and reporting standards for Fortune 50s for over 20 years. But to the point, just here locally, what we just see kind of, it's ad hoc and you don't know when you're going to see it. I know Chuck's got it in his backyard because people are pointing out where these large guest houses are going in that are not monitored. There are no offset requirements for these guest houses. And I actually was picking up a reused shelf from a neighbor out off of LOVR above a large agricultural practice, well, large for at least Los Osos. And I was quite astonished when the woman told me she was living in, you know, her mother's ADU. And I was like, ADU? And I actually looked it up. It was a guest house. And then I looked at all the unpermitted plugins to their septic systems, et cetera. And I think I've said over the years, there's really not enforcement in our county on these illegal hookups. In the CSD, you know, I had a repairman who at our house who was helping me with a faucet during the pandemic, and he was talking about the illegal hookup of his landlord's other renter on the same property. It was an illegal hookup to the sewer. And, you know, Bruce, you've said many times that it's all report driven in this county. I don't actually think we know where the cheating's happening and that people actually realize that they are indeed cheating. So maybe that's not something that you want to discuss at the BMC, but it is part of technically from my field, water use demand, water footprinting, and how you actually calculate that. And it's not being done. Couple that with the sustainability metrics and reporting standards for agriculture, I'm not aware of any projects going on in our community, which might impact our not only chlorides, but our, you know, read James Bishop's notes on the meetings he's been having about nitrates. And I think if we're going forward with the GMO, you need to take what the real picture is into consideration and how to get on top of that. Thanks.
Thanks, Emily.
Richard Margetson.
The letter about the growth management ordinance and the local coastal plan was discussed at the CSD meeting. Some suggestions were made, some questions were asked, because it needed to be expedited and sent out. I'm really surprised that it's not on this agenda. This is coming from the purveyors. I don't know that it's that letter's even available for public review. And I think there's still some outstanding questions. One of the questions that came up at the CSD meeting was 1% of what? 1% of the current population? 1% of the vacant lots that are still available to be built on? Because the calculation on both of them is there's a dramatic difference. 1% of the vacant lots is much lower than 1% of the population divided by 2.5 persons per household. Again, county-driven request, pursuit, that is rushed through the process and not enough public input. And this seems to happen with Los Osos on a regular basis. At least this one's not during the holiday season, like most of them ended up being. You know, the November, December drop something on Los Osos, affecting Los Osos, because nobody's going to be interested during the holidays. But I'm really stunned that this isn't on this agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. We have no further public comment in the room. We'll bring it back to the board for questions or discussions.
I think this is the time that I'm going to weigh in with some public comment, my own comment, before we go on to approve the consent agenda. And it's all referencing this letter that came about so quickly. I agree with so much of what was said. First, two points of clarification. When there was a reference to a guest house in my backyard, I think the reference was to my neighborhood. Like, I can see it over my fence. It's not in my backyard. I do not have a guest house in my backyard. Okay.
I thought that.
The other is that the suggestion that being under oath, anything different would be said up here really offends me. And I'll let it go at that, because I don't want to get too far down that road and show how offended I am by that. But it gets back to my original point here, is that when things are done without transparency, behind doors, not brought to the public's light, what do they think? They wonder if we're trying to hide something. Is there a deal that's been cut? Believe me, I don't hear from developers. Nobody's got my cell phone number. We're trying to do the best we can here, but I think that there can only be good with sharing of information. And I don't agree with the way this last letter came down. It reminds me of the Title 19 retrofits, where you work on something for a couple of years and then wham, you got weeks, to make a comment. And I know that Coastal's process is complicated, but when it's been years that we've been working on this, there's time to work in public comment, or at least a presentation. And you don't have to do anything with public comment. You can smile and ignore it, but you got to take it. Destroying the trust of the community is, we don't want to go there. And so with that, I guess I'm ready to approve a consent. Well, we already did that. We're on public comment. I'm sorry. I'm doing a little venting. I don't appreciate my staff being put in a place where they have to come with a request for a letter, but not the letter for us to see. That takes a lot of trust. I have a lot of trust. I couldn't extend that to everyone. And with that, I'll let it go.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. kind of agree with what you're saying there, you know, just along the lines, I have a staff that hydrogeologists and professionals that meet and discuss these things, and I rely on them to give me input. So, you know, this not being on the agenda, you know, it went out, we didn't have that time. I think that is a concern that we kind of wrestled with ourselves, you know, that was a tough situation. And it wasn't the fact that we were trying to be dishonest or hide something behind the table. It's just, we had to either get it out or not get it out, because the ship was moving is so. I think, you know, there is a lot of effort that goes in behind the scenes that you don't see, but it's all done with good faith, you know, and I know Golden State gets put on that, you know, regulated utility platform a lot. And, but at the end of the day, there are rules that we operate through the PUC, and we can't deviate from those rules, whether, you know, how that impacts, whether, you know, one of the things that comes to mind all the time is the can and will serve letters that we issue. You know, we have a requirement to do that, and we have to follow that, you know. But what we can do in this room is we can monitor the situation. If the situation warrants taking measures or such, we can agree among this board to how we address the basin. So I think that's where we have to get to, but it has to be compelling evidence and not, opinions on whether we should have housing or shouldn't have housing. There's rules and regulations that the county's following for their growth ordinance, Golden State's following for its can and will serve letters, and then we have to monitor. I think overall we've made amazing strides for all of our different agencies coming together and managing this basin compared to where we were before this came together. So I struggle with that part of it because of the amount of effort and compassion we've put into managing this basin. So I'll just leave it at that too. But I do appreciate the public comment. I mean, I really do appreciate you guys getting up here, taking the time and bringing these things to the table, because sometimes they do get lost in our shuffle of trying to, you know, deal with certain matters. So those comments are heard, and we do appreciate them.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'd only observe that the letter that's been referenced here is a product of the water purveyors. It is the result of many, many months of conversation between the county and the purveyors on the matter of water supply as it relates to the community plan that will be before the Coastal Commission. You know, as it is the expression of the purveyor's position as to the position, the proposal that the county has approved and sent on for certification at the Coastal Commission. It in those purveyors which have a public process, it is considered an open public process, as it was at the CSD, and it will become a public, it is presumably a public document now, but it certainly will be part of the record of the action that the Coastal Commission is going to take when they meet here in June, meet here being Morro Bay. So, I think there's full public process on this, and all commentary will be certainly received and made part of the decision-making process.
One further set of comments. Public process involved support letter that didn't even answer the question about the 1%, what that really stood for.
Yeah,
I think there's a clarification that it is dwelling units, current dwelling units.
Yes.
Which is about 6,800 right now, somewhere in that neighborhood. 6,400. So we're talking 64 houses. There's all kinds of complicating factors that the Habitat Conservation Plan credits may not be available to allow that number of houses. All this is part of the big picture that I think should go into a community discussion before important decisions are made, if for no other reason than we look like we're trying to rush decisions to avoid public comment. And that is the worst place we want to be. Oh, one last question that I came up with in trying to find the letter in here in the executive director's report. Apparently there are still 18 houses not hooked up to the sewer that have expired building permits. Where do they fit in the 200 waiting list? I mean, do they go to the top of the list if they get their permits back in order? Just more questions, always.
I haven't checked in on unconnected houses, but they're existing houses. They're not part of the wait list to get new development. The new development is on vacant lots. And again, this process, you know, I can tell you that the necessity, the requirements for any building on what is now vacant lots, should the LCP be certified by the Coastal Commission and their suggested modifications accepted by the Board of Supervisors, is that 2-to-1 water offsets will have to be completed. The proper amount of HCP credit offset mitigation will have to be paid. Between now and the end of the year, and again, it's a fairly complicated process. The Coastal Commission will act in June. Should they choose to certify with suggested modifications, it'll come back to the board probably in September, at which point we, the board, will have the opportunity to accept, if we want, the suggested modifications. And at that same board item, we will put together the rest of the mechanisms for implementing the HCP and all the things that need to be done. So there's plenty of public process ahead before this is finalized. So I don't feel that there's any lack of that at this point.
Okay, thank you.
I just some comments on, you know, the potential for public process. This has come together. It was a challenge to get it onto this agenda. I would offer that, you know, a special BMC meeting could be called sometime in the next week or two that would allow for us to agendize and discuss. But I would look to direction from the board on that.
Again, Mr. Hamill, this isn't something that is up for approval of the BMC. This is an action that was taken collectively by the water purveyors. So while it has some relevance here, it I don't see that it is an action item for the BMC at this point.
I mean, I guess I would argue the BMC is explicitly listed as a party to the actions related to the growth management ordinance. And while, yeah, the BMC doesn't necessarily need to make approval of the letter, I think at least an opportunity for discussion around that could help address some of the concerns around just a lack of opportunity for public input.
Sometimes it's not bad to clean up after the horse, even though he's out of the barn. The meeting should have been first. Public input is I guess there's a chance at Coastal. We can comment at Coastal at that point, but it just would have been, I think, would have been better to vet these things here. And maybe we wouldn't waste Coastal's time if people here were satisfied that, well, the reality is it sounds like a lot, but it's not going to be maybe that. But now there's potential that we'll have a bunch of mad hornets at the Coastal office, and that doesn't help anything either.
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to just figure out what that outcome would be. You know, is it a discussion and chance to voice opinion here with this board, or what would the outcome? Like I said, we've already taken the action. The letter's out there. Where would we go following this meeting? Any thought on that? I mean, what would be the outcome of it?
I mean, I think it would be an opportunity for the agencies signing the letter, describing their reasons and justification for signing the letter. I think the letter has, well, the concepts have been presented to the CSD board of directors. The specific letter itself, as I understand it, is going to be presented to the utilities advisory committee tonight. I'm unclear what processes the other purveyors took in their, you know, at S&T and Golden State, but I guess I would just say it could be an opportunity to talk about the letter, which unfortunately we don't, because it didn't get agendized on this agenda, and I'll take some ownership of that, that it would provide that opportunity.
This would have been that perfect opportunity for the community informational that we've talked about periodically, you know, every quarter or so. Well, we should have a community meeting and update A lot of things have come together all of a sudden. HCP approved, LCP about to be approved, or at least steps taken in that direction. All those things would have been a good opportunity to get the community center full.
So I guess jumping back to my thing, what would be the outcome? What I kind of heard and maybe not have heard at all, but it was justification for why the other purveyors signed onto the letter would help with.
And that, I don't know about justification, I mean, but just an opportunity to have that dialogue around why there, you know, was support for the framework. You know, there was a lot of staff time that went into that, I think, and there is broad support for all the concepts that are in the letter. We just haven't had a chance to talk about it here in the public as the BMC. And again, that's I take ownership of that. I should have found a way to get it on this agenda, and the only way I can really see to remedy that would be a dedicated short special meeting.
And I guess, you know, it's out, it's done, it's the ship sailed. So maybe we learn from this and know that these kind of things are we shouldn't do it. What I don't understand what we're going to come back and do. Are we going to file another letter with the Coastal Commission as a result of the meeting, or what would be our outcome that we would have as a result of that?
Well, I guess there are examples. This is the letter that's out there that's going to the Utilities Advisory Committee tonight. And, you know, but it's already been executed. So I haven't spoken with the CSD on what the intent is there, but, you know, it's just other opportunities for the forums and the people that are, you know, involved in water issues to weigh in on a water related. It's not even a policy, but well, I guess it's a policy framework, but it's a support letter.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, we had a lot of input. It took a curve on us, and we responded back to it. You know, is the way there was years of meeting and developing this, took a curve, and we responded to that.
I'm not sure that I'd see value in another meeting, but I would say that. I abstained from voting on the concept letter. Mm-hmm. When I saw the letter, I would have voted yes on that letter. Mm-hmm.
So perhaps what we can do as a matter of public information is release the draft of the letter. I haven't seen the text of the letter myself.
It's in our Utility Advisory Committee packet. It's
so
in the packet.
Perhaps that PDF could be circulated to the LOBMC mailing list.
Absolutely.
I think that would be helpful.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, I guess just to highlight other opportunities for public comment, it's my understanding that this concept is going to the Los Osos Community Advisory Committee.
What we're doing is having a briefing a week from tomorrow is the LOCAC meeting, and our planning department is going to brief on the next steps with the community plan going to Coastal in June, and how all those pieces, the water, the growth management and the HCP all relate to how what we're expecting in terms of suggested modifications and how we're going to work the process moving forward.
Okay, and that presentation would include description of the framework for the growth management ordinance. Okay, yeah. So yeah, just highlighting that.
And what was the date of that again? I'm sorry.
It would be the 24th, 23rd. Is it Thursday?
No, it's but it's later than the 23rd, isn't it?
No, yeah. That's for Thursday.
Oh. Okay,
let's see.
23rd.
Can't do anything without a calendar.
No.
Yeah.
I shouldn't even try.
Okay.
Yes, okay. It would be the 23rd.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and close public comment at this time, and we're going to move to item 8.
Sorry. Chair Zimmer, there were a couple other public comments that I'd like to just address, not related to the topic. There was a comment about access issues to the website. You know, I think we're, as Chair Gibson said earlier, change is hard. We're in the midst of a transition from the county's hosted BMC website to the Basin Management Committee's dedicated website. And I think some of the traffic may be still going to the old website, which doesn't contain the newest information. So we're working with the county to do a complete shutdown of the old website so that we don't have this confusion occurring. The new website was advertised to everybody on the interested distributions list, and all the agenda packages are still being distributed as they were before. But I think web traffic, if you just type it in, may still be sending you to the old website. So we'll be looking to remedy that. And that was it.
Have a quick comment.
We already brought it back to the board, so
it's quick, it's not controversial.
All right, okay. So, go ahead and state your name.
My name is Ron Smith, mm-hmm. been a resident for 10 years, have a hydrogeology background. I think it's important in the spirit of transparency that the board qualify whatever decisions they make based off of the data that's available to the public. And I'll say as a citizen and a hydrogeologist that where I've reviewed the basin management plans, the annual reports, four metrics have been put out there. My interpretation is for us to achieve sustainability. One of those four has been achieved. And it's open to interpretation if we are trending towards sustainability. And that's like saying that I'm trending towards graduation, but I haven't graduated yet, and I want to buy a car, right? You're not there yet. So we have these four metrics. We've achieved one, and maybe we look good in another one, but based off of the data that I've seen, we're not there. And I think it's important for the board to qualify any decisions that you make based it on the data or reference the data that you're using to make these decisions. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Ron. Okay, we're gonna go ahead and close public comment at this time, and we're gonna move to item 8, the executive director's report.
Bear with me a sec as I get set up. Okay, yeah, item 8, executive director's report. Just a couple of update on BNC initiatives to share with the group. There is the note in there about the website that I already discussed in the response to comments. The other item for update is modifying existing wells LA-16 and LA-14 to be dedicated wells. We've talked about this at previous meetings. That's a key monitoring program improvement initiative for the BMC that it's undertaking in 2024. We're continuing to make progress towards getting the necessary executed agreements with the National Estuary Program, the Los Osos Community Services District, and the BMC to fund that work with the goal of completing that work this year. Some of the near-term next steps will be to release an RFP solicitation for hydrogeologic design services and construction oversight for those modifications. And and once that solicitation has occurred, we would be bringing back a recommendation for a contract award to the BMC for their approval. The next steps after that would be then to apply for any necessary permits, well drilling permits, encroachment permits, any other permits, and as well as putting the actual modifications of the wells out to bid.
Can you remind me of the locations besides LA 14 and 16?
Yes. It's always, I feel like anytime we talk about wells, we should just have the map from the annual report up, and maybe that's something we can work on. And I may get these confused, but Ron can help me. One of them is at the north end of Palisades Road. That's 14. And then the other one is at the intersection of Los Osos Valley Road and Broderson, north side of Broderson. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
So kind of
I thought that
in and around the Midtown site.
What I remembered. Okay.
Yep. There's a brief update here on the lower aquifer nitrate investigation. And we'll really kind of cover that more in more detail in 9B with the more recent update from the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And then the BMC is continuing to look at how it wants to focus its time and effort in future calendar years through a reevaluation of the implementation plan or the potential initiatives that the BMC could undertake as we move forward. And then we've got our updated wastewater and recycled water flow deliveries. And that really concludes the updates that are included in this executive director's report. I would just note that, you know, the executive director's report has sort of been evolving from the previous executive director to what it is now. And we're still looking for ways to maybe help streamline and evolve it further as we move along. So trying to keep it as strike that balance between a historical documentation of a lot of things, as well as providing updates and new and initiatives. And so it may change as we move forward, but open to input from the board and others.
I have one question on the monitoring. Is that, do we believe that we're going to get all this work done in 2024, or do you think this will extend over to 2025?
Great question. We think, just based on the amount of time it took to do the well modifications at the Farrell well, the amount of time it took to drill and construct the Skyline monitoring wells, that we're still on track to be able to get it done this year. We're not feeling the pressure as much because, in theory, we have the ability to roll funds over, but we're still trying to expedite this as soon as we can, just so that we can improve our monitoring network as fast as we can.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and open it up to public comment at this time.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. I have one online. Would you like to do online or in the boardroom first?
Yes, let's do online first. Sorry.
All right, Patrick, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you. Patrick McGibney. Just FYI, on the utility advisory meeting tonight, the letter is not on the agenda, so that's not going to be discussed, at least on the agenda. So I'd like to just talk, though, a little bit about your report, the AMR on the groundwater production. The total production may not have decreased, especially to the extent that it is listed. It has been reestimated using data assumptions and methods that are questionable. Some of them are like calculating the daily average usage of households based on the...
Patrick, we're talking about the executive director. We actually have an action item on that topic, so it may be better suited if you save that comment for that.
All right. Thank you. I thought the executive director's report was to cover the AMR, but it did not. So, all right. I'll wait. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Is there any other public comment online, Laura?
No, there is not. And Patrick, it is agenda number 5 on the UAC meeting tonight.
The letter, right, Laura?
Well, yes, the letter is agenda item number 5 on the UAC packet.
It's part of the discussion in the packet.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we have a public comment in the room. Go ahead and take comment now.
Lindy Owen, Los Osos. I'm, again, maybe this is just website stuff. Today, May 15th, the executive director's report, it didn't even follow, your presentation didn't follow everything that's listed here. I didn't see any talk about the AEM study. I didn't see anything about the sustainable yield. One of my questions is I look at the list of or the amounts of water that were going to Broderson, and they're very increased, which I don't understand why, because we still haven't been using a lot of water with the last of the rains. So my question is, did we put a, was it wasn't a transducer, but it was some kind of a way of monitoring exactly how much water was being dropped into Broderson rather than just guesstimating how much left the plant and subtracting or guesstimating who, what sea pines got, what all the other purveyors are. So I don't know if I missed something, but there's a few things that weren't discussed on here. The nitrates, so I don't know if I'm wrong, but I was curious about some of that information. And if it's coming up later, then I apologize.
Thank you, Lindy.
Hi, Emily again. Just one quick point of clarification. And as far as the executive director, and then maybe Ron, maybe you can answer it. I'm not sure. Maybe Chuck. So at the last CSD meeting, I think it was you, Ron, and I'm sorry if I don't remember exactly, but you were talking about the hydrogeologist from Coastal Commission and meeting and dealing with them. And as far as I'm aware, and maybe Bruce, you've got input on that, there isn't, or what we've been told, is that there isn't an actual hydrogeologist that you're dealing with. He's a very pedigreed earth scientist and geologist. I just, for an understanding of what we're really dealing with in the sciences, I'd just be interested in that. And maybe that comes from Dan. I'm not sure who would really have that information, but that would be great to know. Thanks.
Thank you. We have no further public comment in the room. We'll bring it back to the board.
Yeah, a couple responses. So the ED report. So the structure that we've had with the ED report is we try to streamline it. And so we highlight certain sections where we have updates, whereas other sections where we don't have updates from previous ED reports, we leave them in there as informational items for the community. But I don't necessarily verbally go through them. That's typically the structure. I should, and that was a good point that was made during public comment, is I didn't describe some of the updates that are occurring as part of the Little Sosos Recycled Water Facility. And so the county has been making some good progress on a number of projects, primarily funded through the ARPA program, to connect some of the schools within the community to the recycled water program. The primary focus has been on Los Sosos Middle School. And so that one is sort of leading the charge. And I believe designs have been completed and looking to make those physical connections this summer. Additionally, there's going to be a connection of the community park to the recycled water program. And so those are both exciting milestones, because connecting those facilities to the recycled water system will provide a direct offset to the groundwater that is currently being used to provide irrigation water at those facilities. And then there also are improvements being made at Broderson. I think was referenced that the county is installing a physical meter. Right now, I believe the discharges to Broderson are back calculated based on water delivered elsewhere and water leaving the plant. And so this will provide a direct physical measurement of the amount of water going to Broderson. I would point out that Broderson still is the primary disposal location for treated wastewater within the community, and likely will continue to be until there's significant expansion of the recycled water program. And even then, during the winter months, that, you know, when there's limited water demand, much of the wastewater will still go to the Broderson system.
I'd only add, if I might, that there's actually a sewer permit condition there. I guess it's a waste discharge condition from the regional board that about half of the effluent has to go to Bronderson. It's all part of the mitigation of the groundwater issue, the creation of the mound and so forth.
Sure. Yeah. Sorry, I don't have an answer.
And the question about the hydrogeologist at Coastal, I don't know his background, but I know it's probably over 2 years ago, we were on a call with Coastal. It was BMC staff, county staff, and he was being provided all the information. He presented himself as a hydrogeologist. And he's been provided all the information by Blaine Reilly and the county. And so I haven't had a discussion, but supposedly he's qualified, has come to a decision. I have to say there's only, I think, one hydrogeologist for all the state. But there's been a focus on this because of the controversies we've been having.
So again, if I could add on to that, Mr. Chairman, I'll just say that this is a matter of the Coastal Commission satisfying itself on the matters of water supply. That's part of their decision-making process. And do I know exactly the qualifications of who made that, but they are reviewing materials presented by registered professional geologists and certified hydrogeologists. So they will make their technical analysis and forward it to the as part of their staff report. This again is we're headed now to a Coastal Commission decision, and that material will be before the commissioners for their consideration.
Okay, thank you. We'll close this item, item 8, the executive director's report, and we'll move to our two action items. 9A, a presentation of the 2023 public draft annual monitoring report.
Just turned off my microphone right as I was talking. Yeah, happy to present the draft 2023 BMC annual report. I know I was interested, I'm sure others were, to see how the basin would respond to the historic rainfall that we received in 2023. You know, I think I've given a number of these annual report presentations, and I think this might be the first one where we've actually had above average rainfall. So that's kind of makes it more interesting. But what I have put together is I've pulled out really key figures and information from the public draft annual report just to provide kind of an overview of what's in the report. As those of you that have read the report know, there's a lot more detailed technical information available within the report. And I encourage you all to read it. It really definitely helps improve your understanding of the basin. I understand that it is pretty highly technical. So I will do my best to make it more accessible to the BMC and the public here today. So just speaking of rainfall, you know, one of the key parameters that we track in the annual monitoring report is rainfall totals, as a rainfall is, you know, basically aerial recharge, or rainfall falling on the basin is our primary source of recharge. I believe our secondary source of recharge is water in Los Osos Creek, which is also tied to rainfall. And so, you know, obviously rainfall is critical to our water supply availability. And so, as mentioned earlier, we had above average rainfall in 2023. Our longest period of record of rainfall for the nearby region is the Morro Bay Fire Department. And so that's what we primarily show and track. Well, it's what we show in the figures in the annual monitoring report. And we are working to develop a more local rainfall record with the Los Osos landfill rain gauge. But until that record is comprehensive enough to represent wet and dry periods in a balanced hydrologic period, we're continuing to also track the Morro Bay rainfall. But So we have the cumulative departure from the mean, and then we also just have the total rainfall totals for the Morbay gauge here. You know, with the above average rainfall, the cumulative departure went up, which is a positive sign, and the Morbay rain gauge measured approximately 25 inches of rain, which is interesting because when you look at the measured rainfall here in Los Osos, the Los Osos landfill rain gauge measured 34.75 inches, which is obviously a significant higher amount of rainfall than we've seen in recent years, and even the highest amount of rainfall we've seen at Los Osos landfill rain gauge since the current record starting in 2006. We've talked about this quite a bit at the BMC. You know, we believe that we get slightly more rainfall here in Los Osos than they receive in Morro Bay. We went through a detailed analysis of that when we last updated the sustainable yield estimate. Seeing almost 9 inches more is, I think, more than we would usually see is the difference between the two rain gauges. I haven't done a deep dive to see how previous years compare, but it's just wanted to highlight that it there's a little bit of a disconnect. We talk about the Los Osos landfill gauge in the report, but then we show a figure for the Morro Bay gauge, and the reason for that is we're still building that more comprehensive record, and so I thought it'd be helpful to kind of show graphs of both. And then, as I mentioned earlier, you know, rainfall has a significant impact on stream flow. And so what we've got here, these are not all in the annual report, the 2022 and 2023 hydrographs for the Los Osos Creek stream gauge are in the report, but we also pulled the 2024 graph just for reference. And so you can see in 2023, you know, with the significant rains in December and then really ramping up in January, the creek started flowing. And it didn't stop until September of 2023 or so. You look at that. And, you know, I just want to point that out, that's pretty significant. That's an opportunity for our basin to recharge for an extended period of time. And, you know, and it's just interesting to point out too, that, you know, the amount of time that the creek is flowing is and recharging the basin is not necessarily proportional to the inches of rainfall that we receive. It seems like that sometimes once you reach a certain threshold of rainfall that you can get the creek flowing and flowing continuously, that it can keep flowing. Whereas in 2022, I mean, it literally only flowed for a length of a month or so. 2024 is had a late start, as I think we all probably recognized, but did ramp up. And so we've seen the creek flowing since about, I would say, early February, and flowing potentially at levels currently that we saw it flowing in 2023. So it would be interesting to see where the how that tails off as 2024 progresses.
I think on the rainfall, one other thing, if I remember the number correctly, is that the sustainable yield is based on an average of 17.75 or something like that.
Yeah, so we had that on this chart. I should have mentioned that. Yeah, the average rainfall estimate for use in the sustainable yield in the steady state model is 17.3 inches. Yep. Okay, moving on to groundwater production. We saw a significant change in the estimated amount of groundwater production in 2023. And, you know, that was primarily associated with the increased rainfall that we received. With additional rainfall, there's less demand for irrigation, both for agriculture as well as residential and commercial landscaping. And so we saw that, you know, reflected in the purveyor metered water production data, you know, a decrease from previous years and the lowest purveyor production we've seen since 2013. We saw it in the community facilities. as well as in agriculture, and a really a pretty significant reduction in the amount of estimated irrigation water pumps for agriculture from previous years. Both of these numbers are our estimates. We have, as was presented at the last meeting, I believe, or maybe it was the meeting before that, we have a soil moisture budget model that Cletharis geologists utilizes that takes into account rainfall patterns and both in magnitude and variability to estimate the amount of groundwater that would need to be pumped to make up for the evapotranspiration demands. All of those contributed to a lower total production number. The other thing that contributed to a lower production number was our estimate of domestic or your rural residential groundwater pumping. The county, as part of the water offset study last summer, did an updated estimate of how much groundwater they believed that the rural residential, so non-purveyor residential users, were pumping. And, you know, that was included in the water offset study vetted by the BMC hydrogeologist. And so that estimate is significantly lower than the previous estimates that were developed as part of the basin plan and some of the basin plan formational documents of 110 acre feet as opposed to 220 acre feet. So all that really, you know, culminated in a total groundwater production that, you know, is significantly lower than we have seen. I probably, if I had done my research, I could say it's been lower than we've seen since the BMC started, and probably several decades before then, potentially. Now, you know, this is likely depending on hydrology, and well, I guess we kind of know what our hydrology in 2024 was, but, you know, it likely to see a bounce back if we don't see these historic rainfall years, but it was definitely a significant decrease in the estimated amount of groundwater produced. Transitioning to recycled water. So we have our table here that we show in the annual report that shows the planned volumes of recycled water and their discharge locations compared to the actuals. You know, one of the key takeaways that we always note here is that the actuals are significantly lower than the planned. And, you know, I think we can largely attribute that to the significant conservation measures of the community, as well as the requirements for conservation retrofits to connect to the sewer system. The majority of the water did go to the Broderson leach field, as was described earlier, portion of the water to Bay Ridge Estates leach field. Sea Pines takes delivery of some of that water, and there's about 4 acre feet, at least last year, for use for agricultural water reuse. Hopefully, we will see that urban reuse number go up in 2024 as we connect Los Osos Middle School and the community park to the recycled water system. And then that, in theory, should have a corresponding decrease in the amount of groundwater that we estimate that we have to produce, as was shown on the previous slide. We have 4 main metrics that we use to assess the health of the basin: the basin yield metric, the water level metric, chloride metric, and the nitrate metric. We saw an improvement in 2023 in 3 of the 4 metrics. The basin yield metric, we saw a significant improvement. The basin yield metric is a calculation of the estimated groundwater production divided by the sustainable yield. And so with a significant decrease in the estimated amount of groundwater that got pumped, as we just discussed, that significantly lowered the basin yield metric to a level below the target of 80 for 2023. And again, that metric is going to be significantly variable based on hydrology, but also other factors. Implementation of basin yield programs to improve the sustainable yield, and then implementation of conservation or recycled water connections to reduce groundwater demand. But a positive progress in 2023 relative to that metric. Also, a positive progress in the water level metric. We saw one of the largest, if not the largest, jumps in the water level metric in 2023. Yeah, definitely the largest we've seen in the recent history. Again, associated presumably, you know, with both the increased rainfall, which increases recharge to the basin, but it also, as we've talked about, reduces the pumping. So it really has a dual benefit effect of providing additional recharge and also reducing the need to pump, which helps improve and increase water levels. The chloride metric saw a deterioration from 2023. It was largely tied to some increases in chloride in a couple of the metric wells, also tied to the fact that, or an influencing factor was that one of the key chloride metric wells, the Rosina well, which we've talked a lot about here at the BMC, it did not have water quality when it was sampled in fall of 2023 representative of the lower aquifer. Again, it was influenced by borehole leakage. It had higher nitrate concentrations than the threshold we have set for determining whether or not it's representative of lower aquifer water. And so to create the chloride metric calculation for 2023, we had to reuse the chloride value from 2022. And so we're not necessarily seeing the latest values for that well, and potentially not seeing any impacts we might have seen from the 2023 historic rainfall. I'm optimistic that probably not the last time we're going to have to talk about the Rosina well and the chloride metric, but one of the last times that we're going to have to discuss this is at the end of 2023, constructed the Skyline monitoring wells that are located in close proximity to the Rosina well. They're dedicated monitoring wells. They're not production wells. They're new wells, so hopefully, you know, they're not susceptible to borehole leakage, and hopefully can be used at some point in the future with the BMC's approval as our well for monitoring chlorides or seawater intrusion in that critical portion of the basin. And then the nitrate metric lowered in 2023, decreased from 17.5 to 14.2, and I'll talk about that a little bit more on some subsequent slides. So the basin yield metric, I kind of covered this a little bit before. This is my attempt to kind of try to show the basin yield metric graphically. And I think it's still a little bit of a work in progress, but you know, the basin yield metric, as I described earlier, it's the ratio of estimated production divided by the sustainable yield. So what we're showing in the dark green line is the estimated sustainable yield for the basin of 2,380 acre feet adopted by the BMC in 2021. And then we have, as outlined in the basin plan, a target to be producing groundwater, pumping groundwater at a level of 80% less than the sustainable yield estimate. And so in 2022, we had not reached that target, you know, with pumping around 2,000 acre feet as it has been over the last 4 or 5 years, that's above the target. But in 2023, with the reduced groundwater production, we did reach that target for the first time. At least the first time since we adjusted the sustainable yield estimate. I think I can say that. So that's, you know, that's a positive sign. Again, highly dependent on the amount of pumping that occurs, which can be influenced by the amount of rainfall that we're getting year over year. Longer term trends have to do with the other projects and initiatives. Hopefully everybody's familiar with these graphs. These are, you know, key graphs that we utilize to observe the chloride and water level metric. Again, significant jump in the water level metric to 4.3 feet, which I think is exciting. We've talked about this before when this data first came out, but we're approaching levels in the water level metric not seen since the 1970s. So we're seeing, you know, recovery in water levels within the basin, largely attributed to conservation and implementation of basin plan programs, the water recycling facility, and other and BMC and purveyor initiatives, well, party initiatives, I should say. Chlorides did increase, as I described, somewhat associated with the lack of modern data, somewhat associated with slight increases in some of the other wells, but are still kind of within this realm of what I consider like an oscillating, we're kind of back and forth, bumping up and down within in this range for chlorides in the metric. The dashed lines here show the projected water levels and chloride metrics as the basin plan gets implemented. So, you know, I think, you know, we're tracking those projections relatively well. I mean, you could argue the you could say the water level metric is a little behind this time period here. The chloride metric is maybe a little ahead, but, you know, generally following the trends that we were hoping to see when the basin plan was developed. The question came up about change in groundwater and storage and the potential that that could be influenced by sea level rise. And so that was a question that was raised by the Director Reinecke at the last meeting. I did connect with Spencer at Cleith Harris Geologists and got an explanation for why that's occurring. And I'm going to attempt to explain this in a way that hopefully, well, as I understand it and others can understand it. So what we're seeing, I'll come back to the numbers on the slide and just kind of work on that general explanation, is that, you know, we're seeing water levels in the lower rock or the water level metric increasing. And I think it's important to remember that the water level metric is water levels in the lower aquifer and the confined portions of the aquifer, meaning that there's underneath the regional aquitard. And so when you can have increases in water levels that don't necessarily translate to proportional increases of estimated fresh water and storage in the lower aquifer, because that water is under pressure. And water is relatively incompressible. So as the pressures increase, you're not necessarily seeing a proportional change in the volume of water in those confined aquifers. You're still getting the benefit of those increased pressures and heads for fighting seawater intrusion, but it's not necessarily translating into feet of fresh water spread out over the entire aquifer.
He also does the calculation of how much fresh water above sea level, which is the important datum in terms of that impact on basins safety.
Correct. Yes. Now, if you see increases in the water levels in the upper aquifer, the first water aquifer that are not confined aquifers, you will see a corresponding increase in the amount of fresh water and storage. And that is really what we believe we saw in 2023 and what's reflected in the change in storage calculations, you know, that we saw an increase of 2,600 acre feet of fresh water within the aquifer associated with the additional recharge that occurred in 2023. And you can kind of see that over time here. That last slide was just a 2022 to 2023 comparison. This slide is a comparison that really looks back to 2018. And you can see, you know, somewhat of a consistent estimate of the amount of groundwater and storage above sea level for both the spring and the fall measurements. And then that significant jump in 2023. And, you know, corresponding with that, again, historic amount of rainfall that we received in 2023. Next is the nitrate metric. We saw an improvement in the nitrate metric, which is a decrease in the nitrate metric. Again, a relatively significant decrease in the nitrate metric. I guess it's not that much more than other years, but continuing the trend of lowering nitrates. One of the things that I thought was interesting about this decrease in the nitrate metric is some of the previous decreases in the nitrate metric were largely associated with the nitrate metric well in close proximity to Broaddersen, where we're seeing that really direct transition of historic septic discharge groundwater with high levels of nitrate being influenced by the water that's disposed at Broaddersen that has very low levels of nitrates because of the treatment at the water recycling facility. In this decrease, it's, you know, based on my review of the data, it's not necessarily so much the Broaddersen influence. It's reduced concentrations at a number of the other nitrate metric wells that saw decreases in nitrate concentrations. And I don't know if, you know, that's just a factor of, you know, increased rainfall and additional dilution or other things, but I thought it was a positive sign. Now we have the sort of aerial view of mapped seawater intrusion in the central portion or the synclinal portion of the basin. This is kind of how we use to illustrate the movement of seawater intrusion within this portion, well, and other portions of the basin. And so these lines represent the localized movement of the 250 milligram per liter chloride isopleth. So in 2005, it was located in where that color line is. I'm not going to try to describe it. We estimated, based on observations of chloride concentrations, that it encroached inland between 2005 and 2016 to the location shown in green there. Since 2016, it's been estimated that isopleth has retreated. You see a significant retreat in the area where the label is in 2020. I think that's largely associated with the fact that we drilled the Cuesta by the Sea or Lupin well and actually determined and got physical measurements of the chloride concentrations at that location. But we also did see, estimate that it also retreated in the areas in and around LA-10. In 2021, some additional retreat, 2022, some more, and then 2023, we're showing a slight difference in its location from 2022. That's, this represents, well, as stated there, zone D. In zone E, we are seeing an increase in concentrations in the 250 milligram liter chloride isopleth in the northern portion of the basin, or LA-11, up here along Pasadena Avenue, with the concentration in 2023 reaching 350 milligrams per liter. This is something we've talked about at previous meetings. This is something that we are monitoring closely as a potential concern for seawater intrusion that could be occurring in a different portion of the basin than we were really tracking and mitigating against earlier in the LA-10 area. I wanted to do a little bit of a deeper dive on LA-11. And so I pulled together, with the help of Cleith Harris geologists, a couple of these graphs. So the first graph here shows that these are water level graphs for LA-11. And the graph here kind of shows that sort of historical trend that we see in the water level metric, with, you know, water levels in the 70s and 80s really starting to decline, bottoming out in the 90s, and then starting to improve into the 2000s, and then improving more recently here in the last 5 years or so. And so this is, you know, a positive sign. This graph is included in the annual report along with a couple of other wells. I just wanted to isolate this well specifically. It did, I believe this is the 2024 value, so it's lower than the 2023 value. But generally a positive trend. And so we're optimistic that, you know, as water levels continue to increase, the chloride concentrations will stabilize and then hopefully start to decrease like we've seen in other portions of the basin, specifically the Rosina area. And I can also say that just as a bit of a sneak peek, we did see that happen in 2024. I don't have the official results, but what I was told is that the chloride concentrations in 2024 were slightly lower than they were in 2023. So that represents the first spring to spring reduction. So that, you know, that's a positive sign, but definitely something we're still watching. The other interesting point about LA-11 that was pointed out to me just by Spencer Harris. So this is a transducer that data from a transducer that we've installed in LA-11. And we only have a short record from 2022 to 2024. But I don't know that we have a physical observation of this, unfortunately, but based on the transducer records, there's potential evidence that in 2023, that well went artesian for a period of time, which is also something that likely hasn't happened since the 1970s. So some positive signs, some negative signs we're seeing at LA-11 with respect to chloride concentrations, some positive signs we're seeing with respect to water levels. We're really hopeful that the transient model will help us do a deeper dive into, you know, how we expect conditions to change here at LA-11 over time. So more to come on that. Then we have the upper aquifer water level profile. It's not quite a metric, but it's another tool we use to help evaluate whether or not we think the water levels in the upper aquifer are sufficient to protect against seawater intrusion into the upper aquifer. In the last couple of years, we had seen levels in upper aquifer well 5 drop below the protective elevation shown in red. We did see those levels come back up a little bit to basically to the protective level in 2023. And we did see the chloride concentrations decrease slightly from 74 to 69 milligrams per liter in 2023. And so that's a single year improvement, but, you know, we're still continuing to monitor this over because we really want to observe conditions over the longer period. So that's, again, something we're also tracking closely. And then transitioning away from monitoring to projects and initiatives. So just an update on the basin plan, implementation of the basin plan programs. The significant progress made in 2023 was continued progress towards the completion of construction for expansion well number 2, or the program C well number 2 by the Los Osos Community District. This is also sometimes referred to as the Bay Oaks well. That well has been drilled. The transmission mains to connect that well to the CSD distribution system have been installed. You may have seen some of those construction activities in and around the LOVR South Bay intersection occurring last year. And I think the final step is to equip that well with a pump and necessary monitoring and communications equipment to allow the CSD to bring that well online. Unfortunately, I think that well is being impacted by a number of projects, and it's the long lead times required for certain specialized electrical and other equipment. But estimated to come online this year. So excited to see that happen. And then it's more of a administrative change, but, you know, we, the BMC, in August of 2023, did remove the deferral of the third program well from Program C through, you know, adaptive management procedures. So now the Program C does include three wells again. And just wanted to highlight some progress towards some of the recommendations that were included in this annual report or previous annual reports. One was to update the maximum sustainable yield estimates now that the location for the second Program C well has been finalized. Those estimates have been prepared and were reviewed by the BMC in its decision to remove the deferral of the third well from Program C. Reevaluation of the water level metrics, now that we've completed the wellhead surveys, that has been on hold. The surveys have been completed, but we have decided to put the metric updates on hold because we're continuing to make significant improvements to the monitoring program with modified and new monitoring wells. Development of a rating curve for the stream flow sensor on Los Osos Creek, that was completed in 2023, largely thanks to the 2023 rainfall. We were able to get flows sufficient quantity and duration to complete that rating curve. A peer review of the basin model is in progress. As we've talked about, the BMC, along with the county and the State Water Resource Control Board, is funding development of a transient groundwater model. Part of the development of that transient groundwater model includes a peer review by a third-party hydrogeologist. And so that the transient model is being developed, and while it's being developed, it is being peer-reviewed. Water level is UA5. Continue to monitor. That's ongoing. Attempt to locate and salvage well FW7 in near the Broderson Mound. So there was a well near Broderson that I believe was lost during construction. And I mean lost, I mean buried. The well, it didn't go anywhere, but we haven't been able to relocate it. So hopefully there'll be an initiative to go find that well and we add it back into our program in 2024. And then install lower aquifer monitoring well at the east end of Skyline. That was completed in 2023. So that will significantly improve our groundwater monitoring program. And so some other key initiatives, covered some of these already, but the continued progress towards the transient model development and the water recycling funding study that will utilize that model to evaluate different recycled water and other supplemental water supply opportunities for the Los Osos Basin. Skyline monitoring we covered, stream gauge we covered. In 2023, we completed a Los Osos Basin well database. So this is a comprehensive database of all the well information that we were able to obtain and compile and put into one database. And that has already been a useful resource for the transient model development. The county made progress on a couple of initiatives. One is the water offset study, the evaluation of water conservation measures and potential in the Los Osos Basin. The county is also, as described earlier, making improvements to the water recycling facility, both for the production and metering infrastructure, but then additional connections to the water recycling distribution system. Talked about LCSD well number two. And then an administrative milestone is the BMC in 2023 approved the necessary documents and authorities to open a bank account. Which has streamlined a number of administrative processes. So finally, the schedule for the 2023 annual report, it was released on May 2nd. We're here today receiving a presentation on the public draft report. Public comments are due today on the annual report so that Cleith Harris Geologist has sufficient time to turn around the final draft of the report. for presentation to the BMC in June. It says June 19th here, though we may be needing to reschedule that meeting due to conflicts. So more to come on that. But in June, the BMC will review and consider approval of the final 2023 annual monitoring report for submission to the court by January 30th, 24. So that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate the walkthrough on the report. I think it was very detailed and appreciate that. Any questions before we go to public comment? No? Okay. We'll go ahead and open this item up to public comment, please.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. Would you like me to do online first?
Yes, please, Laura.
All right, Deborah, you just have to unmute yourself.
Hello, good afternoon. Deborah Howe with LOCAC. And typically at our LOCAC meetings every month, I do a water report. Not to put you on the spot here, Dan, but I have asked Dan to take over doing a water report at the LOCAC meeting because I think he'll give better information than I will. And it looks like I'm going to be moving into the chair position. And so with that in mind, I have asked for him to attend, not necessarily every meeting, but certainly in this month where you have the draft annual report, I think it would be appropriate for him to do high level milestones at the LOCAC meeting. Again, in the line with the whole conversation that we just had about transparency and community outreach and improving that communication. So that's my comment. Thank you.
There's one more online. All right, Patrick, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you. Patrick McGibney, again, with the Sustainability Group. Dealing with groundwater production, as I was saying, I doubt that the production has decreased as much as it's been estimated using data and assumptions that some are questionable, such as calculating the average daily usage of household based on the lowest Los Osos Community Service District and S&T Mutual Water. What about Golden State? How come we don't have anything from them also? And then, you know, dealing with the BYM, that's talked about in the basin plan, and it says that to balance the BYM with production, you can either reduce production or you can increase the sustainable yield. And you've been doing that both over the years, and this time you've now reduced production. And one of the things that's really questionable is 50% of our production or thereabouts is unmetered. So those are all based on estimates, and especially the one we're talking about, domestic wells. When you drop it from 220 to 110, you know, all you're doing is you're decreasing your production to be able to then balance your BYM to get it under the 80%, which is where you're actually required to be. So I'd like to just have that on the record. Also, the AMR indicates that recommendations for improving the quality and availability of data, quote, are contained in the AMR, and that the BMC will have completed a monitoring well cluster on Skyline Drive by 2024. And it adds that the BMC plan to reevaluate the metrics is on hold, which it's been like that for years now. Again, the AMR should simply acknowledge that significant improvements are needed in the metrics and monitoring program, not only to accurately and reliably assess seawater intrusion conditions, but other threats to sustainability, such as rising nitrate levels, saltwater buildup or salt buildups in the lower aquifer, and also PFAS contamination. Also, the basin management plan, the metrics in the AMR, it states these metrics allow the BMC regulatory agencies and the public to evaluate the status of nitrate levels and seawater intrusion and the impact of implementation of the basin management plan programs in the basin through objective numerical criteria that can be tracked over time, end of quote. this statement is inaccurate and is misleading for the above reasons. Los Osos Sustainability Group has pointed out the significant deficiencies of the BMC monitoring program and metrics in previous years, but the BMC has made very few improvements in the monitoring program as of now, and even fewer in the metrics. Meanwhile, the BMC is...
Thank you, Patrick. Your time's up. Thank you.
There is no further public comment online.
Okay, we have public comment in the room.
Lindy Owen again. I could not pull up the executive director's report on the website, so couldn't really see these as well as I wish I had, but it looked to me like the chloride level has increased, and yet so I don't know, then it showed the other chart or graph that I saw looked like it was decreasing, so I just wonder. I'll have to wait till I can get to a computer at home to see if I can find this report. But anyway, again, just questioning if the chlorides are up higher, that is significant to an increase in seawater intrusion, which is the reason that we built a sewer. And I'm just questioning whether we are improving our water at this point to the point where we think that we can continue developing and pulling water out of the ground. And my other issue has always been, I'd like the 500 private wells are all being, they're mostly outside of the prohibition zone and the water purveyors areas. So that is the county. So I'd just like to clarify who pays for the county's share of this meeting, this group, the committee and the activities that we all contribute to. What amount does each private well contribute? Because the reason I say that is we all contribute. We're paying for a sewer. We're paying for property that had to be bought. I mean, there are a number of costs that the purveyors, customers are paying for. Whereas the private wells, apparently, from what I've been able to see, have absolutely no costs whatsoever, except what it costs to get the water out of the ground. Then we come back to, well, how do we monitor them? Mr. Gibson has proposed that up in Paso Robles, they should be monitored. That's how he wants to solve the problem in that basin, which is in very degraded. But yet he doesn't want to do that here, because, I mean, we'll go by these guesstimates and the area, you know, things from the satellite readings and the guesstimates of how many inches and how, when it fell, you know, that's all a guesstimate. Whereas I would like to know what the cost is to put a monitor on every private well. And you can tell me that that is not something that the private wells would accept. I don't really care how much water they use. I want to know how much they use, because you need to know how much they use. That is half of our basin is based on what's coming out of those wells. So I would appreciate that brought forward. You said you would do it, but I see no cost ever presented.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Sorry about that. Becky McFarland, I want to repeat a sentence from the Sigma best practices, and then I have a few more things to say. Basin-wide pumping within the sustainable yield estimate is neither a measure of nor proof of sustainability. Sustainability under Sigma is only demonstrated by avoiding undesirable results for the six sustainability indicators, which we call metrics here. In looking over the annual report, under seawater, some things jumped out to me. One of them was where it says the estimated position of the fall 23 seawater intrusion. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it says there is insufficient information to represent current lower aquifer E intrusion in a planned figure view, but generalized, blah, blah, blah. Down below, it talks about Seawater intrusion into Zone E is a significant threat to basin sustainability and has been for decades. And then at the very bottom of page 58, it talks about Zone E seawater intrusion is interpreted to be laterally pervasive in the western area based on elevated concentration on and on, you know, looping. But it shows, which indicates a worsening condition over time. Additional deep monitoring wells are needed to further define the extent and movement of the intrusion. And I think, you know, we talk about the different things in the basin plan that are supposed to be done. How can we make decisions on building or on our water sustainability if we still don't have sufficient monitoring? And I did want to say, my comments about oath is not to demean or degrade or whatever, but just that conversation about that afterwards, about people not knowing about the building, the growth policy, that's why people don't trust. It's, you know, and Chuck and others have brought it up. Yeah, well, the county dumped this on us at the last minute. That's why people don't trust. We want to. Some of you are our neighbors. We want to trust this. So yes, transparency. The more information, the better. The more meetings here. How many meetings were missed last year? Couldn't that be a time where we can ask a question and get an answer? But it seems like let's do it less and less. So, and I'm sorry I get upset because it is upsetting. This is our water and we want to believe what's being written. Also, I saw in here real quickly in this report, it says the purveyors are currently working with the county at the request of the Coastal Commission to evaluate the water supply availability and triggers for water offset requirements. I'm just going to add this part. Guest houses and granny units and homestays, they're not required to do a retrofit. What is the limit on how many guest houses? Two-bedroom homes.
Thank you, Becky.
Yeah, what's the limit? We want to know the number.
Hi, Emily, again. So this just trails to previous comments, trying to figure out where, you know, because it was published in the CSD before, I think, Ron's report about the state California Coastal Commission hydrogeologist. But going back to the reports that we just heard, which, Dan, that was really, it was actually great to hear the narrative with the charts. So, and I just took these notes down, but to my knowledge, a certified professional hydrogeologist or geologist for that matter has not declared the Los Osos aquifer is trending, quote unquote, towards sustainability, because it's not. My belief based on the data that both my husband and I have reviewed with others, and that has been published, that they would not risk a hydrogeologist, would not risk their certification based on such an unsupportable theory. This is key because a certified professional hydrogeologist opinion has weight. It is like annual reports that are signed by certified professional hydrogeologists that verifies the accuracy of the report. I haven't been able, and I mean, I'm really open to hearing from others in charge and here participating from the BMC. I'm not aware that Cleith Harris has said this phrase, trending towards sustainability. And, you know, in closing, you know, it's like going to a doctor, an MD, for an illness versus a physical trainer who's pumping you up during a workout. These terms and the types of sciences, a civil engineer, a geophysical, you know, PhD, you know, a water company, and I know you, and thank you for saying, Mark, that you have hydrogeologists. I've worked with them my whole life. I'm married to one, but I've worked with engineers my whole life. They're in sciences. It's important, and it's important to get the record straight. And this just goes to Ron. I'm not trying to humiliate the record or anything, but it's important when we throw these things around or report out on them that they're accurate. who's saying it, why are they saying it, where's the data and the science. And Blaine Reeler really is also not a hydrogeologist. So that's all I had to say, and thank you for your work.
Thank you, Emily. Okay, we have no further public comment. We'll bring it back to the board. I mean, at this point, this isn't an action item. That'll be the next meeting. It's more information. We've heard the comments. We've taken notes. I don't know if there's any other comments from the board members, or Dan, if you have a comment, you're welcome to make one too.
You know, I think just want to highlight that, yeah, there are positive signs we're seeing in some areas. There are warning signs we're seeing in other areas. I think we highlighted LA 11. We highlighted UA 5. Zone E is another area that we need to continue to closely monitor. I use this analogy, and I'm sure Spencer hates it, that sometimes I feel like seawater intrusion is a bit like whack-a-mole. We put strategies and things in place to address it in certain areas of the basin. We see success, and then we see other areas of the basin where we see differing conditions. And one of the things that we've, you know, talked about is with the update of the basin metrics, which we've put on hold, which I agree is unfortunate. And again, I think the reason we did that is because we were making great strides in improving our monitoring network. And is that, you know, the water level and the chloride metric don't necessarily tell that temporal story. They aggregate all of the data into one data point, and which is helpful in sort of telling a larger story. But the updated metric, the drafts that have been put together have contemplated, yes, we can have a consolidated metric, but then we can also have sort of individual, not even metrics, but just graphics that show the conditions at the individual locations within the metric wells. And I think that would be helpful in kind of telling that whole story. It's not just what's the metric it's doing, it's what is happening at the individual wells also.
Maybe I could reframe that. This is an incredibly complicated physical system that we've taken the management on. And the effects that Dan notes, that when we make certain choices about where we pump and how much we pump and how much we consume and all these things, all have a variety of effects. But as with any complex physical system, there are going to be observations of the outputs. The impacts of those are going to vary to a certain extent. I think the key issue here is that this annual report has been prepared by the appropriate professionals with the appropriate professional certifications, and taken as a whole, there's a separate question as to what we as policymakers choose to do, both in terms of the water purveyors and their particular choices of the future steps of projects, and the county in terms of how we regulate land use based on this technical information. I don't think that there's a the discussion of who's got what qualifications is I think not the focus here, because we have the information before us. It's been put out for public consideration. We're here to take comments on it from the lay public and from any professionals that might want to offer an actual technical analysis of it. I think it's important, and we're dispatching the requirements of the stipulated judgment, the interlocutory stipulated judgment that we approve this. I think, and you know, I don't know if Cleith Harris, if Mr. Harris is listening, but I certainly appreciate his extensive work on this. I think we have another fine volume in documenting success in appropriately managing this basin. So I'll look forward to getting this back and getting it approved and getting on with all the other actions that are before us to continue to make the kind of progress that we need to make.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, just, you know, one comment on the shortcomings of what tools we have available. There is the bat, right? The best available technology. And I think that's what you're seeing some of the times. It may not be the tool of choice that any of us would want, but we have to use what's available. And that, you know, best available technology is we rely on that in every aspect of the water industry to some degree. So I think, you know, we are making the best decisions we can and taking the quickest actions and possible. So, yeah, I do appreciate having Cleith on board too. I want to recognize that, you know, he's got more knowledge than probably any of us in this community on the basin. So we're very gifted to have him preparing this report for us. Thanks. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close this item. Unless there's any further comments.
I would like to also take the opportunity to acknowledge Cleith Harris Geologist and their staff for their efforts on the basin. They, while I sit up here and present this, they are the ones that do all of the work putting this together and preparing these recommendations and creating these, you know, I think really hopefully helpful figures to help us all and better understand the basin.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move to our other action item, item 9B, update on the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board email and investigation into the Cabrillo Estates groundwater portion of the basin.
Yeah, sorry, give me a sec here. Okay, yes. Thank you, Chair Zimmer. So item 9B, if you recall, we had a discussion around lower aquifer nitrates at our last BMC meeting. It was not a fully agendized item. It was an item that was included part of the executive director's report. And so out of an abundance of caution, and I think good caution, it turns out we sort of stopped that item. We requested that we stop discussion on that item that, and we consider it as a potential future agendized item because we didn't want to find ourselves in trouble with the Brown Act. And so, and in conferring with legal counsel subsequent to that, I think that was the call. And so I was happy that we did that. We've got some new strategies around how we can make things available for a more open and comprehensive dialogue that we can employ to avoid, again, potential future issues with the Brown Act. That being said, there was a request to bring this item back to the BMC and to bring an update from the regional board to the Basin Management Committee. And so I at the request of one of the directors, I reached out to the regional board for an update and for their attendance at the meeting and received the response from the regional board that's included in the BMC agenda packet. And, you know, I'll just try to paraphrase this as opposed to read the whole email, but basically the response was that the regional board is not able to attend the BMC meeting at this time because the regional board does not have new information to report on the nitrate source investigation that continues to occur in the S&T Mutual and Golden State Water Company wells. When the regional board has new and significant information to provide, the regional board will provide or can provide an update to the BMC and can answer questions from the BMC parties. And then the email, it goes on to really just describe, you know, all the activities that the regional board has undertaken since March 23rd of 2023, when it last provided, an in-person significant update to the Basin Management Committee. That in essence is the update from the regional board on this issue. And again, we wanted to, there was a request to agendize it so that any dialogue that the BMC directors would want to have could be allowed.
And if you'd like, Mr. Chair, if you look at the email that Dan included,
in the agenda packet, you'll see the last bullet was May 7th, last a week ago yesterday. We did convene a meeting between myself, members of our public works staff, and members of the staff of the regional board. I can characterize that briefly as the start of what promises to be an ongoing and detailed and as needed appropriately technical discussion about how we are to go about understanding the source, explaining the level of nitrates in two particular wells. That's LA8 and LA9, which are down near, I think the easiest way to put it is near Los Osos Valley Road at the base of Cabrillo Estates. You know, the information that causes this to be raised, of course, are the concerns raised by S&T Mutual over a number of months now as regards nitrate levels rising in their well, which is LA8. Although as we look in a little more detail at the data, going back as far as 2003, 2004, we do see a rise going through until about the time of 2016 when the sewer plant started. And in consultation with Spencer Harris, we have seen what we consider to be some leveling off, actually, of the nitrate levels in that well. It's a variety of ways in which you can analyze this data, but there is, you know, regression analysis suggests a possible leveling off. At the same time, in LA9, that leveling off is not obvious, and that speaks to the complexity of the physical system that we're tasked with managing, and to understand that physical system, to understand the results we're seeing in these two wells, requires understanding that physical system and being able to do some calculations on that physical system. That's a little beyond where we go. As you heard from the regional board, they have a, I don't know how to characterize it, perhaps a suspicion that they think the most probable cause of the source of those nitrates comes from septic discharge in Cabrillo Estates. Just to summarize briefly, the county's technical experts at this point, and I concur with their analysis, don't believe that there's sufficient evidence to draw that conclusion definitively. The regional board would tell you, and again, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but they have said this, that among the other possibilities for seeing those nitrates are legacy nitrates in the groundwater that are being mobilized by the change in patterns of the cessation of septic discharge and then the influx of water coming in from the leach field at Broderson. And so our discussion centered around whether we, the county, would pursue a certain number of monitoring wells, which was the first suggestion of the regional board. We didn't feel at this point that the proposal for those monitoring wells actually was going to get at the root of the answer. And our suggestion to the regional board, and again, we'll be discussing this further with them down the line, is that once we get the transient model in place late this year, that sometime in the first part of next year, and let's say toward the end of the first quarter of next year, beginning of the second quarter of next year, that transient model could be used to do some refined calculations on contaminant transport. That would be a generic term for the nitrate concentrations that we see there. We believe there is time. The increase in nitrates is gradual enough that we have some time to analyze this. But what we'd like to do is use the refined transient model to do a better prediction of what we think might happen to those nitrates as the effects of the wastewater treatment plant take effect. As an analog, we saw the graph in the annual report. It's figure 23. Which shows the chloride metric and the well level metric, and the key there is the dashed lines. So the red line being the chloride metric, the projections using our current steady state model is that once the sewer started operation in 2016, we would see a continued rise in the chloride metric before it started to fall. That's just the physical, the time delay, the time constant, as it's called, but the time delay in the response of that physical system. And as you can see from that data, the data with some noise, if you will, on top of it bouncing around is roughly tracking within that envelope. So we think that the transient model provides a next generation approach to calculating the projection. And we think that needs to be applied to what we are observing in the nitrate concentrations now to see if we can expect over some number of years that they would actually start to go down. We'll look at the results of that. We'll continue conversations with the regional board about other means by which we can get at the source of those nitrates. And we'll obviously continue to keep the LOBMC apprised and to work directly with S&T Mutual on any approaches that they're interested in. So that just sort of fleshes out the latest in terms of what we're doing with the regional board.
Okay.
Did I hear you say transit model this fall?
End of the year.
Yeah, end of this year.
End of the year.
2024.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So the transient model will be developed, end of the year. You know, it may take a little time before all the reports and technical memorandums are reviewed and available for public. But yes, transient model on progress for being usable by the end of the year.
In your discussion with the regional board, were they okay waiting for this transient model? I mean, I think I heard you say that they wanted some monitoring wells. I heard that, and that cost came across our board, and
if this were the State Department, I think we would say we had frank discussions on a wide range of issues,
yeah.
And at this point. We are reviewing our plans moving forward. We heard no objection to it, and they may further consider how they might want to approach this problem, and we'll continue discussions with them. Their approach was to see this as an expense that should be borne by the wastewater treatment plant, and the county at this point is not really prepared to decide that that's appropriate at this time. So further discussions to come.
Sure. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate the update and keeping us informed on your discussions with the regional board.
Absolutely.
Okay. Public comment. We're going to go ahead and open this item up to public comment.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. All right, Patrick, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you, Patrick McGibney. Why not just simply have a dedicated monitoring well for nitrates? That seems like a really simple solution on doing that. I don't think that's been discussed or even contemplated, at least that we know about. The investigations and S&T did on LA9, I believe, they found pharmaceuticals in there, which obviously are coming from Cabrillo Estates. So, yes, you are getting nitrates. I mean, I don't think there's much dispute on that coming down from the Cabrillo Estates. It's time for them either to get on the sewer system with everybody else or to get updated septic systems on there, which will still put nitrates into the aquifer, but not as much. Sewer system is the best result on that one. So back again, monitoring well dedicated for nitrates would be a good way to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick.
There is no further public comment online.
Okay, we'll open it up to the board.
Lindy Owen again. Well, historically, logically, there was never any real reason for Cabrillo to be not put into our sewer system. None of them are on 1 acre lots. They meet the same criteria that all of us met, but yet there was a favor given. Politics is always a problem. And that favor has brought it to the one source of nitrates, apparently seems to be Cabrillo Estates, and it's taking out a whole area of well, which is disturbing. But at this late date, it's still not too late to correct. I know Deborah Howe is in Cabrillo, and the group there, they have been having talks, ongoing talks, about looking at the cost of hooking up to the sewer. It's going to be cheaper. They're looking at the LAMP requirements for upgrading their septic. If they have a leach field problem, if they have a septic leaking, tank leaking problem, they are all forced to go into what is estimated between $40,000 and $50,000 of monitored. They're just a kind of a nightmare for. They're not a good solution. The good solution is to go ahead and join the rest of us, processing our waste out at the wastewater plant. It's all gravity fed. It's pretty darn simple in a lot of ways, as complex as ours is. So I hope that they come up with a solution and move forward. I think the regional board is absolutely right. That's the main source. And once that's eliminated, then I do believe those nitrates, there'll be some lateral moving, but I think the nitrates will definitely drop down. And usually when you give a nitrate amount, aren't you monitoring nitrate readings from all over the basin, Dan? Because that's kind of where it used to be. I know that there were certain wells that were really high and other areas that had no nitrates. So it's a pretty random selection of what actually gets down into the aquifer. Anyway, I hope that the Sunset Terrace gets their water solution helped by the rest of us, or maybe that Cabrillo supports the pollution that happened in their well. Thank you.
Thank you, Lindy.
Becky McFarland again. I just kind of had to roll my eyes at that. You know, this Cabrillo Estates, and I have nice friends up there, going back and just shaking my head again, why ever was that neighborhood left off of the sewer? Why was any house in this town left off the sewer? And the county, you know, the county's talking about, oh, well, the wastewater project would take care of those, putting in wells to monitor their nitrates. Cabrillo Estates has not paid one penny that I know of. Maybe there's some other funding towards helping to heal our aquifer. I'm sure they're conserving up there. I've seen, you know, grass replaced, and that's wonderful. But why ever would we have to bear more burden to monitor their nitrates, which we were told was on a different watershed back in the 80s, is just beyond belief. Also, in the basin reports, it says we need more monitoring wells. Does it have to be just nitrates? Why can't we put those in and measure other things too? And again, I'm upset because this whole thing has caused division in our town by special favors given to people and putting the burden of our basin on us. And it's a rotten feeling, and I don't like feeling that. So county, I say step up. Let's not wait. You know, we don't have the transient model yet. It's not there, and it sounds like December, but we've been hearing lots of estimates of time for different things. You know, like the electromagnetic, whatever it is, was supposed to be out last, what, fall, then March, now it's next fall. We're not getting the data. And yeah, we don't feel good about that. So county, step up and take care of those nitrates. Thank you.
Thank you, Becky. We have no further public comment in the room. Bring it back to the board. Any further comments or information?
Again, let me just, in terms of public comment, we heard several conclusionary assertions that the nitrates come from Cabrillo, that it is possible that's true. There are other sources that are equally possible, and there is no evidence to differentiate one from the other at this point. So that's the goal. That is the work before the county and in conversation with the regional board, and we'll report as we make determinations on that.
Very good. All right. Thank you. Okay, we'll close this item 9B and go to adjournment item 10. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate your attending this meeting.